Management report. We've saved Dave Ware till last. So you should be fresh.
Chair Smith, Commissioners, my name's Dave Ware. I'm the Wolf Policy Lead for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. A little different role for me, different title. This is just part of our annual briefing for the Commission in terms of how wolf management, conservation, recovery has proceeded during the past year. And so I'm going to touch on, of course, a little bit of a refresher on wolf plan recovery objectives, also how we monitor the population, talk about probably the biggest issue for wolf management, which is conflict management, but then also talk about different things that have occurred in terms of outreach, research, budget, and even recent legislation, although you know that you heard quite a bit about that yesterday. But then also talk a little bit about strategies for 2015. So again, the four goals of the Wolf Plan are to restore self-sustaining populations, manage wolf-livestock conflicts, maintain healthy prey base, and develop a public understanding and promote coexistence. In terms of defining how we get to recovery, a pack is defined as two wolves traveling together in winter, and a successful breeding pair is a male and female, adult male and female, raising two or more pups through December 31st. Our objectives are to delist at 15 successful breeding pairs for three consecutive years, divided amongst the three recovery regions, with a minimum of four breeding pairs in each of the three recovery regions, and then the other three can be scattered anywhere. Or if we reach 18 successful breeding pairs for 1 year, again with a minimum of 4, 4, and 4. In terms of capture and monitoring, we spent a lot of our energy and effort trying to do this so we can see how we're progressing towards recovery, but also it has benefits for some of our conflict avoidance as well. Generally, we start by taking reports from the public. Once we get enough reports and or similar types of reports in the same geographic area, then that's what triggers our biologists to go in and see if we can confirm that activity. And through either tracks or scat or trail cams, and once we were able to do that, then we would follow up and come in and attempt to trap the wolves to get a radio collar on them. We do also winter captures using helicopters. Typically, that's best done on packs that already have at least one wolf collared within the pack so that we can find them and go in and either replace collars that are wearing out or add to the number of collars in that pack. And typically, we like to have two collars per pack. Depending on where the pack's location, either one GPS collar and one VHF collar. The GPS, of course, is monitored by satellite, and the VHF is the older technology, but those collars last longer and still assist us with management. This is a photo of a GPS collar. So in terms of how we did this past year, this is, and actually this goes through all 8 years, but we're continuing to see growth. I think many of you have already read the news releases, but our minimum count, and again, the minimum count is just how many we could find during the year and document as being separate individuals. Number of known packs, so that number was at 68. Number of known packs has increased to 16. The successful breeding pairs, it has held steady at 5 for a number of years. But growth rate for the year was up 31% from those that were counted the previous year. But you hear a lot about how this pace is going. I just want to remind the commission that our ability to find all the packs, document breeding pairs, and document individuals is difficult. And so these are really what would be considered minimal numbers or minimum numbers for the state of Washington. And so I wanted to articulate that. In terms of known wolf mortality, we're going to get into that a little bit more later, but we did document quite a bit of wolf mortality this past year. But as you can see from the statistics, we documented almost that many in 2012 as well, which was when we ended up removing one pack in northeast Washington. So wolf packs for the past year, there's the 16. We've got several new ones, but we also lost at least one. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. So the new ones are Profanity Peak, Goodman Meadows, the Whitestone on the Colville Indian Reservation, and then the Toucannon down in the Blue Mountains. And Oregon was kind enough to send that pack to us with a collar on it, so a little less work for us. In addition, we talked about the breeding pairs, and there's the packs that qualified as being successful breeding pairs, and again, that definition is two adults and that raised at least two pups through December. One of the questions that you heard earlier in the open testimony had to do with qualifying as a breeding pair, and so that again is the definition and why those qualify. But I would also let the commission know that when we were up doing our winter captures on both the Huckleberry and the TNOA packs, those packs appear to be together still. They were together during the breeding season, which means they're likely to stay together. And we really won't know in terms of what the impacts of those breeding females being taken last year. We really won't know if they bred or not until, of course, until the breeding season. But in addition, again, it's all based on the definitions and the things that we talked about. So in the example of the Smackout pack, that was an adult female that, or at least that was all we were able to document, and she brought off, I think, four pups through December. And so obviously a pretty unusual event, but also didn't qualify as a breeding pair because it was just one adult in that pack. And also in the Lookout pack, they produced pups, but they only had one pup left at the end of December. And we're not sure whether the Carlton Complex fires were the reason for that, but certainly we did find at least one wolf pup carcass up there that had been burned, and so just not sure of that. But a lot of times when folks talk about what is the pace of our recovery, they'll pick on certain things in terms of the agency's ability to monitor and suggest that perhaps we have a lot more than we have. But then in other cases, folks want us to be more cautious, and so they'll talk about some of those same data in a different way. But it is tough to keep tabs on wolves. They're very secretive, and so I just wanted to dig into the details a little bit to give you an idea of how tough that is, how tough that can be. This is just a table that shows how we track everything every year, and kind of lays out what we know about the wolves that we either had collars on and or were able to document. And so it discusses everything from successful breeding pairs to depredation events. In terms of known wolf mortality, and we thought it was important to describe this because we did have so many that we were able to document this past year. And so you see in 2014 we had three wolves that died of natural causes. Donnie talked about a couple of those that were cougar kills. We had one wolf that was taken in a control action, three that were documented illegally taken, one other human, and a couple of unknowns, although, like I said, we did find the carcasses. And this graph was just designed to show that within the Northern Rocky Mountain DPS, that when you looked at what the sources of mortality were, that we're seeing those same sources of mortality here. So it's not a lot different. It really wasn't a comparison of Washington and the Northern Rocky Mountains in terms of you know, what proportion, or is there a difference in the proportion. It was really just to show that, that the sources of mortality are very similar. But one of the things that we've been fortunate with in terms of the proportion of the minimum population that was removed is that we're still quite a bit lower than what we saw in the Northern Rocky Mountains during recovery. In terms of trends in the minimum number of wolves, we're seeing a steady increase. In terms of successful breeding pairs, again, stability at least at five. In terms of wolf packs, continual increase. That's one of the questions I get a lot is, well, if you only had five breeding pairs, how come it keeps increasing? And so obviously there are some that we don't catch, but also we're continuing to get immigration from other states and provinces. So in terms of a summary of where we're at with wolf recovery, wolves continue to steadily increase. They're also expanding their distribution. This photograph is from a wolf in Klickitat County last year, which is southern end of the Cascades. And so from our perspective, wolf population recovery is progressing. In terms of conflict, as you know, we place a fairly heavy priority on prevention, and there's a variety of tools that we use to try to get us there. We do that in a variety of ways, including we will help cost share the use of those preventative tools. In 2014, we had a total of 37 agreements. The majority of those had to do with range riders and or assistance with sanitation, carcass disposal. But we also work, in some cases, we work with producers by hiring our own range riders, or we contract them, and the producers are accepting of us having those range riders in and around their livestock, typically on public grazing allotments. We've also worked with several producers on carcass disposal sites and composting sites, and I'll talk a little more about one that we've produced on our own property. And I'll talk a little bit more about the research projects, but some of those research projects also include the use of preventative measures. And then the last part is just contracted outreach to help get the word out on what producers can do. This past year, we investigated 32 individual depredations, and the asterisk there is to note that obviously in the case of some producers, there were multiple investigations for that same producer. So these were just the individual producers that asked us to come out and conduct an investigation. So of the 32, seven were caused by wolf. Seven were caused by other wild carnivores, mostly cougar and coyote. One was unknown predator. In 12 cases, it was undetermined. And in five cases, it was something else, either structural or, in one case, a combination of ravens and eagles. Total number of depredations in the state that we've been tracking over time. Obviously, you see the in white is the number of livestock animals that were killed and or depredated, and in the black is the number of wolves that were removed as a result. Again, last year was because wolves got into an open allotment on sheep, they tend to kill a lot of sheep in those situations, and so these were the ones that we were able to document. We talk a lot about what we've seen in especially in the Northern Rocky Mountains, because that's most closely resembles, I think, the conditions in Washington. We often talk about the fact that 20% of wolf packs end up in a depredation or depredating on livestock. Obviously, we're seeing quite a bit less than that to date in the state of Washington, and we're pleased to see that and hopeful that that we can continue to stay at that lower rate. We actually had two packs involved in the depredations, the Profanity Peak pack, where some cattle were killed. We were able to document a total of three depredations, three events as well. In the case of the Huckleberry pack, it was a sheep producer that Wolf got into his sheep. That's the area where we did end up in a lethal action and removed one wolf. And then the other star down in the southeast part of the state was actually not from a pack, but from a lone wolf had gotten into again a sheep pasture, but caused a couple of depredations down there that we were able to confirm. Again, if you look at the percent of packs in Washington depredating, we're down at 12%. Rather than the 20% that you hear about from the Northern Rocky Mountains. Here's what I want to spend a little more time about, because this is the fourth goal of our plan and probably the goal that's been the greatest challenge for us here in the state of Washington. I think in most other states that have wolves as well, but certainly here what we're seeing. We continue to do a lot of outreach, and that can be public meetings, group meetings, those kinds of events. We've also had some trainings where we, in concert, at least in this case, with a range rider issue with Conservation Northwest, conducted trainings. We get producers to attend those, and we talk about the kinds of proactive things they can do. In addition, we've got the variety of brochures. We do post information in the hunting pamphlet, as well as other printed materials, and of course our website. Website's probably where the best variety of materials are, and we've got the website divided up into different audiences, and I think a lot of folks are familiar with that. We also have the Wolf Advisory Group, and I'm going to talk more about that here in a minute. And then this past year, we also contracted with Western Wildlife Outreach and with our research partners. In part, that had to do with expanding our outreach program. With Western Wildlife Outreach, we were pretty focused on wolf conflict avoidance, and so they've developed several sets of materials for us. Most of those are either completed or about to be completed, and so we'll be using those over the course of this next year. I did touch on the composting facility that we've developed at Sherman Creek. We're looking to do that in other locations as well, both as a facility that can be used by the public, but certainly by our cooperators with our prevention techniques. In terms of the Wolf Advisory Group, the mission has been to have a group of citizen stakeholders help us, advise us with implementation of the Wolf Conservation and Management Plan. I think it's pretty apparent that folks can read the same words at times and come up with different perspectives on what those words mean. And so we were hoping for a citizen group to help us with that. We've recently expanded that group from 9 to 18 members. We've yet to have a meeting with the new members yet, but we've been doing the doodle poll, and it's looking like late April is going to be the time when we would end up with our first meeting. And again, the other thing that this group will help us with is they do function as a review board for compensation. Not as fresh as I should be, but anyway, the review board for compensation, and we've not actually had any of those appeals yet taken to the board. But I'm thinking there'll be some questions, and I'll talk more about that with the questions. But in terms of compensation and how we deal with that, in terms of scientific research, we do have the Washington State University Large Carnivore Lab. They're mainly focused on assessing wolf-livestock interactions and the use of preventative tools. In addition, the University of Washington has a couple of projects, one that's looking at the human dimension side of wolf management, but also potentially looking at is there a potential for developing a wolf economy, so predator-friendly livestock sales. They've also got one project going on the Colville Indian Reservation that's not here, where they're looking at kind of a behavioral study on white-tailed deer and their impacts or their response to predation and predators. And I'll touch on that just a little bit more here in a minute. But we've also got a couple of studies. You've heard about several of those during the process of presentations on the three-year package. Just finished up some white-tailed deer work. We've got additional work that we're in the middle of implementing now, trying to find a better way to establish population estimates for those critters, because obviously the concern about impacts to a lot of the ungulate species, until we can get a better handle on their population levels, we're not going to be able to monitor that or measure that other than perhaps through harvest. We've done that for both white-tailed deer and moose. We finished the moose one here recently and saw some pretty good results from the new techniques that we're using for moose. In terms of the budget, this is the available budget for this biennium that will end June 30th. We've got a variety of sources of funds, some federal money. We have allocated a little bit of money out of the wildlife account to help us deal mostly with lethal actions. In addition, as you remember, we have a $10 increase on the personalized license plates that's dedicated to wolves. That's generating about $1.6 million. In addition, we had another $300,000 that we had been using for wolf management and continue to use for wolf management. We also have a background plates, several background plates, but the orca background plate is dedicated for managing threatened and endangered species, so we're using a little bit of money out of that fund as well. Wolf expenditures, this is through December of 2014. As you can see, that the majority of funding we've been using for population monitoring and putting collars on wolves. And then there's a variety of activities that are associated with conflict management, including a contract that we have with Wildlife Services, our cooperative agreements with landowners, those are landowner payments, hiring of contract range riders. And so when you add all of those up, it equals just about the same as the population monitoring, so pretty comparable. And then in addition, we do have a contract for some research, and out of that contract, as of December anyway, we had spent about $23,000. And then outreach, again, I talked about some of the products that we've generated from that. That was about $80,000. And then the lethal action we took on the Huckleberry Pack cost about $27,000. Legislation. As you can imagine, anytime that in Washington, we've only had two lethal actions, but when we do, it typically generates a lot of public concern and interest, and that played out in the legislature as well. There were 12 bills introduced that talked about everything from regionally delisting to delisting in the federally delisted area, translocation, killing wolves after two confirmed depredations rather than our current 3 to 4, amending the Wolf Conservation and Management Plan, and then assessing ungulate populations. There's four of those that are still in play right now. One is for regional delisting. We've got a couple that talk about amending the Wolf Conservation and Management Plan. 5960 has crossed over to the House, and it does not have several of the amendments that were placed on 2107. In the House that I think make that a more palatable bill. And we also still have the assessment of wolf ungulate impacts, 1676, in play, and I think both of those bills passed out of the House, I think both unanimously, and so a lot of support behind those two, and so hopefully they'll make their way through the process. In terms of new strategies for this coming year, one of the newest things is developing local conflict deterrence plans. And the idea there is that you put together a local working group of producers. They come up with their own thoughts and agreeing to what they're willing to put in place for the coming year. We've had some success with that and struggling a little bit in some other areas in terms of getting working groups put together and functional. But I do think that we'll have some good progress made on that. And it really is a commitment from the local community and what they were going to try to do to prevent conflicts. And so we're really excited about that. In addition, we've been going door-to-door. We continue to use that as our best technique, we think, to get to producers to try to help us. We've also got a couple of partners. Conservation Northwest has several agreements with folks as well. And new I know that Defenders of Wildlife has a much bigger presence in Washington than they've had in the past, and they're looking to assist in proactive agreements as well. We also recognize that we need to work closer with local governments. That's been a big concern, especially in Northeast Washington. Once issues start to become heated with livestock interactions with wolves, and so they've requested, and we're moving forward with trying to be maintain better communication with them, and we're also looking to expand our outreach and research projects and try to be a little more proactive on the outreach, anticipating the time of year when different things occur. Of course, the biggest outreach event right now has to do with our 2014 population status, but we also recognize that there are some almost predictable issues that we can anticipate in the future, and trying to get out ahead of those a little bit. The last one, and I've got one more slide to talk about it, but we're going to implement, or hope to implement, a conflict collaboration program to try to help us get at this social tolerance and acceptance of wolves and wolf management in the state of Washington. I'm not sure the level at which anyone else has tried to get into this type of a program to get at really the underlying conflict. Certainly, wolf management is contentious in and of itself. But it also may just be kind of the tip of the iceberg in this graphic, where if you can't deal with some of the underlying conflicts, you're probably not going to be able to deal very successfully with the higher level, which is in this case wolf conflicts. And so the conflict company headed by Francine Madden has finished her assessment. You've heard about that, and I think you all have a copy of that, or if you need one, we'll get one to you. And she does a pretty good job of summarizing where the conflict is and lays out some recommendations for us to how to move forward. One of those is specifically that she wants to know if the different groups that were interviewed, if they're wanting her to continue on in this process. And so we'll be doing a providing an opportunity for those who were interviewed. She interviewed about 90 folks. We'll be providing an opportunity for those folks to weigh in and let us know whether they would like her to continue in this process. Once that occurs, we'll plan the next steps, but the likelihood is that she would be willing to facilitate this first meeting of the Wolf Advisory Group at the end of April, and then work with us to outline additional steps that we might be taking in the future.
I don't know, well, now you jumped ahead on me, but back up a couple where you were talking about working with local governments. We had a wee bit of a hiccup in our area on dealing with local governments, and hopefully we got that resolved, but that is something that I couldn't stress enough, because you're moving into the Klickitat area, they're going to have more of an effect in our area, and just be open and honest with local governments right from the get-go, and get ahead of the situation so we don't end up with the wreck that we have up in Northeast is something that I couldn't stress enough. So, thank you.
Good counsel. Other questions?
Any questions? Yes, Commissioner Keough.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Dave, could you go back to the slide of regarding known wolf mortality? Actually, it's a different slide. I think it's the one that has the different categories: natural, control, legal, other, human, harvest, unknown.
There we go.
Yeah. So I recall this isn't too long ago, the commission adopted a regulation which provided for the ability of a private citizen to take action, remove a wolf in limited situations. I think it was domestic animal owner and also livestock. And, you know, there were some limitations on that, but I'm correct, right? We do have regulation that...
Yes,
that
there is a rule that was passed by the commission that would allow a domestic animal owner to protect their domestic animal if it was being attacked by a wolf. And as you remember, a lot of debate and associated with the details of and the language of that rule. But and I think a lot of the concern had to do with the definition of attack. But anyway, to date, it's not been used. I think some folks have told our officers, especially that they might have had an opportunity to do it, but they didn't get it done. And so, at this point, we haven't had any wolf mortalities associated with that rule.
Yeah, I mean, and the reason I asked that question is, you know, there was a lot of concern by citizens. We heard a lot of testimony that this would pretty much allow open season on wolves, and at least we haven't seen that. We haven't experienced that.
Right, not at this point.
At this point. Okay, thanks.
Good question. That away?
Yeah. Sure. I think in that vein, Bob, Nate, I'm sure can answer this question. What was it in Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming? There was only like two or three cases of where the Cottony Act was actually legitimately used. So I think it's more of a peace of mind for a rancher than a real reality,
right,
of catching an animal.
In as part of the Rocky Mountain NRM, the rule was that for wolves south of I-90, they were considered non-essential and non-essential experimental, and so they were able to have a little more leniency in terms of the take rules in that area. And so when I looked at their statistics, I think up until 2003, which is when wolves were met their delisting criteria for all three states, up until that point, I think five wolves had been taken under those rules that would allow them to take them in the act of attacking livestock.
Mr. Chair. Yeah, and just one follow-up comment on that. I think in fairness, though, and I know the department will, it's good to see that we're categorizing these wolf mortalities. I think it's, we have an obligation and duty to follow up and monitor this, and we're already doing this. I think, you know, in terms of fairness and just seeing how many wolves we are seeing, if there are any, that are removed by private citizens under this rule. It's an ongoing thing, and just want to let people know that.
Good. All right. Dave, thank you, sir.
That's it.
Shall we meet again? That'll wind up agenda item number 20.